Rave Radio. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another exciting episode of AV Insider. Today, I'm super excited to speak with Ira Friedman. He is the CEO of Bay Audio. And as always, I'd like to thank my sponsors for keeping the lights on over here in an undisclosed Northern California warm weather location. Ingram Micro, they are the world's largest technology distributor, delivering flexible multi-channel supply chain and solutions and more. If you go to ingrammicro.com, you can check out my peeps over there. And Atlas Sound. My friends over at Atlas Sound provide speakers, amps, everything I can think of as an integrator that I would need to integrate to, for lack of a better word, because I haven't had enough coffee today. But today, we are speaking with Bay Audio, who sounds like they have a lot of custom solutions for you as the integrator. Ira, welcome to the show.
How you doing?
I'm well. How's it going over there?
Good. Good.
Let's start off. Let's talk a little bit about Bay Audio. I'm not really up to par on everything that you guys offer, but it kind of sounds like you have a lot of custom solutions as well as standard stuff for the integrators.
Yeah, the company started about 15 years ago, and the whole purpose was to create very specific solutions for the high-end integrator.
Okay.
These guys are going into homes, and they're faced with a theater, a distributed audio system somewhere, a bedroom, hallways, outdoor system, and we wanted to be able to give them a high performance solution for each of those rooms.
So you have like your in walls, your in ceilings, sound bars, I would imagine, and a bit others as well.
Yeah. So if you think of any challenge that you would have inside of a house or outside, we have some kind of engineered solution for that. There are some products that are standard that we build and keep in stock.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are other products that we customize for very specific applications.
Let's start with some of your standard stuff. I mean, I imagine, like I said, you know, you probably have some in ceilings, 6-8 inch, some in walls in that same range. The standard stuff, when I need something that's like an in-wall solution that isn't your standard range, and I mean, can you guys make me a custom in-wall speaker? What do you guys do on that?
Well, I'd rather not use the word standard for anything that we do.
Okay.
Because it's not like we have an apples-to-apples solution that you can compare across the board. So it's not like we went into the business and said, hey, we need a 6.5-inch thing, an 8-inch thing, and a 10-inch thing.
Right.
That's more of a retail mindset.
Okay.
Where you needed to show a good, better, best, or different price points. We were driven way more by the engineering challenge. And so for any particular room, we have a list of challenges. And the challenge then drives the engineering process. You know, the question is, how do you overcome a particular acoustic obstacle or aesthetic obstacle? And then what's the best solution for that? So to answer your question, in the case of architectural speakers, we don't have multiple sizes. We have one sized in-ceiling product. Hmm. And it happens to be a 7-inch driver.
Okay.
And we engineered it from scratch, and the challenge was, how do you get something that's small and unobtrusive but covers a very large area and has great off-axis dispersion?
Hmm.
And you end up being driven towards a certain woofer size and a certain tweeter size to accommodate those acoustic challenges. So, you know, a traditional approach might be, let's do a 6.5, an 8-inch, and a 10-inch.
Mm-hmm.
But are you, for us, the question wasn't, how do you make three different things at three different price points? The question was, how do you solve a real acoustic challenge, which is, give me broad coverage in a room, so as you walk in and move about the room, you don't get hot spots, you don't get cutouts, you don't get bass that's strong in one area and weak in another area. And you don't get beaming when you stand beneath the speakers. So that to us was the acoustic challenge for a distributed audio speaker. And we ended up with, I don't know, 4 or 5 models that solved that problem. But they're all using the same size driver. the differences are in the amount of power they handle, how loud they play, how low they go, and the amount of the quality of the off-axis dispersion.
I already like the way your company is designed and thought of. I mean, it's not, you know, like you said, oh yeah, we have a 6-inch or we have an 8-inch just because you want a bigger woofer.
Right.
You guys were, you know, thinking, okay, everyone does that, right? You know, why, what are the problems out there? How do we create a solution
right
to that problem? And, you know, like you, how you mentioned, you know, in ceiling, in wall. And it sounded like you kind of came, and then the answer was, you know, it came about to the 7-inch woofer size, correct?
Right. Because it gave us the most output.
Okay.
And then it wasn't too large that it became that it became obtrusive aesthetically in the room. Because
mm-hmm.
I don't like looking up into a ceiling and seeing like a pie-sized grill. I want something small and elegant.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so, you know, we kind of used the form factor as part of the engineering challenge. So that's an in-ceiling solution. If you look at the in-wall solutions, we have three products, and they satisfy different challenges. The first challenge that we were faced with is how do you get a lot of sound into a very small footprint? And the footprint that we were working with was something that was no larger than a piece of paper. And we ended up actually with a 6-inch by 9-inch footprint as being the maximum size that we could work with.
Okay.
And we wanted that to fit into soffits and small spaces, particularly in kitchens, and to keep it as visually unobtrusive as possible. I personally don't like looking at a wall and seeing a large in-wall speaker. It just takes away from the house.
Right.
So to keep it small was a driving force. However, people typically use in-wall speakers for louder than distributed audio. So they're using it for small theaters, like bedroom theaters, or they're using it to fill up a whole dining room or a living room. So they're looking for quite a bit of output.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll use one speaker as an example. The JM40 that we make is about 6x9, and it has the same output as a speaker that would be 2 to 3 times the size. We have a proprietary 4-inch driver that we developed. We have a proprietary tweeter. The frame is an injection molded aluminum, which is kind of an odd process to get you a very thin aluminum that doesn't have any of the burrs that you would get from die casting. And then the drivers are mounted into two substrates. We created something that we call rock dust, which is a shaved granite and alpha aluminum particles and a resin that are all molded under extreme pressure. So it's almost like a corian that has metal in it. And the drivers are mounted into that, and then that whole thing is braced with an MDF baffle. And the thing is tiny, it's 6x9.
I just want to stop you really quick, and it's just a quick question on the aluminum. You said injection molded aluminum. The purpose for that was to create the housing so that it was not to have to be like this really big piece of aluminum or structurally more safe or
there are a couple sturdy. Of different there are a couple of different ways to mold aluminum,
mm-hmm.
and typically if you think about like a typical aluminum piece is going to be die cast. Which is kind of a gravity molded process, and you end up with a thicker piece of metal, and then you have to do secondary operations to get it smooth.
Right.
Injection molded aluminum, it's like injection molded plastic. It uses the same kind of process,
mm-hmm.
but you're actually blowing into the mold aluminum particles, like little balls.
Mm-hmm.
They go into the mold, and the mold is superheated under pressure. And what it allows you to do is to get a thinner wall, but a much denser piece of aluminum.
I see.
And so we're able to get to thicknesses that you could only get to with, let's say, plastic injecting.
And sorry, not to be like too like invasive on the materials and such, but is it like a like marine grade aluminum or something like that, or like a, I don't know, 60, 61, 2011, something like that, or
In terms of the kind of aluminum?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure in-wall is just for interior, but like if you wanted for stuff, you know, for outdoor or something that needs to be, well, I don't know if like the rest of the housing.
Yeah, you can use the whole product outside. The aluminum is injection molded, mm-hmm. and then it's powder coated.
Okay.
So we powder coat it white so it looks right inside of a house and it's paintable. And then we have a flush grill that just fits right in. Mm-hmm. So there's no frame around the grill. And you end up with a tight little package that plays awfully loud and goes pretty darn low for a small speaker.
And then just to touch on the grill, is it like one of those press fit around the square?
No,
or is it like
no, it's a we actually have a mold mm-hmm. that's made for us, and it's stamped into a flat stock of steel.
Okay.
And the steel is quite thin. It's only about a millimeter thick. And then there are neodymium magnets embedded into the frame of the speaker that hold the grill in place.
Nice. Okay.
So it's quite elegant.
Right. Yeah. And it's, I would imagine, pretty easy to remove and put on without damaging the grill.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Yep. Some other companies out there haven't gotten to that point yet. It's very, very much easy to damage the grill or bend it and not be able to put it back in.
Well, not only that, if you look at a lot of speakers 3 years after they've been installed, they just look old. They look used and kind of beaten up.
Yeah.
Even if they haven't been fussed with, they still kind of age in a weird way. Mm-hmm. And part of that is just because if you're doing a pressure fit grill, it's going to relieve itself from the housing at some point and just kind of work its way out. And, you know, sometimes the plastics are getting yellow and we're driven by aesthetics, and we need to know that 5 years from now the thing looks as good as it did when it started.
Right. That's your name out there.
Yes.
Well, okay, so that's, again, so it's not your standard application. It's very unique in that you guys came up with or asked what are the problems out there. Your number one, aesthetics, because that's a very, usually in a home when you're doing high-end homes, because it sounds like that's who you're geared toward, is an integrator.
Yeah.
And an integrator who maybe does custom stuff or a bit higher end. In that case, and that when you get into stuff like that, when we're talking about aesthetics, people like to hang artwork, people like bare walls. You don't have a lot of switches, and so we get into automation, usually like less is more, and it's just a very clean look. So why not have your audio and solutions match in that sense.
Right. And that's a perfect segue into LiveWall, because that is the aesthetic ideal for speakers mm-hmm. is to never see them.
Right. Everyone wants to hear them. No one wants to see
right.
them.
And the challenge with invisible product is that it's a compromise, or it has been a compromise up until we worked out a couple of engineering feats, and we've got some patents on them. So up until LiveWall came about, there were a couple of ways that companies were designing invisible product. And they have acoustic challenges. And because of that, you've got, you know, 6-7 years of integrators and clients kind of putting up with invisible product. They buy it because it's driven by an aesthetic dictate, but then once it's been installed acoustically, it's not very satisfying. And so the whole category has kind of been sullied by bad acoustic performance. And we saw that as the engineering challenge. So the challenge was, can we make something that's invisible that if you blindfolded someone, they couldn't tell the difference between a high-end bookshelf speaker and an invisible solution. Hmm. So it took us a couple of years to figure out the physics of it.
Right.
But LiveWall is essentially a visual trick. It is a regular speaker. There's a diaphragm and a voice coil, and the thing is pistonic, and it plays just like a regular speaker does, The difference is that the diaphragm, which is a rectangle, is the face of the wall. And we've designed the diaphragm so that it actually requires additional mass in order to be tuned. And that additional mass comes about with mud. So when the integrator places the speaker in the wall, it's flush with the wall. They tape it. So they're taping essentially the diaphragm to the wall.
Okay.
And then they skim coat over the entire thing.
All right.
And it becomes a visual trick. It is a speaker, and that no longer a cone, but a diaphragm, is what is facing into the room.
Let me stop you there. Okay, so once it's been mudded or skin coat over, is mm-hmm. there a limit? Well, I'll get into that next. But it's then using that surface to be tuned in to what you have designed it to be at?
Right, because if you think about how a speaker operates, the mass of the moving part is critical in the tuning of the speaker.
Okay.
And so you have to actually know what the actual mass is going to be, plus or minus, but you have to know what the mass is going to be in order to tune the product. And in the case of a live wall product, it's the diaphragm that we use is shy in weight of approximately the weight of the skim coat.
Okay.
So once you add the skim coat to it, then you have the full weight of the diaphragm, and then the motor structure is tuned specifically for that weighted diaphragm. Now, the tolerances are pretty loose, so you could skim coat and you could be sloppy with it, or you could be, you know, like a Venetian plasterer.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Like, how thick could you go? Because some people like, you know, like a hard, thick layer. You know, we go to talk about stucco or something, or in certain cases where you normally wouldn't do something like that.
Well, we've shipped over 5,000 pieces, and we've seen applications from level 5 Venetian plaster all the way to outdoor stucco.
Interesting.
And also whatever the plaster that you use inside of steam rooms and saunas and gyms, like, you know, where the room is hot and
right,
and
a lot
wet.
Of pressure and wet, yeah.
And there doesn't seem to be much of a difference.
Really?
What we're asking for is just a skim coat.
Okay.
You do a 16th of an inch and everything will be fine. If you sit around with a trowel and slop on a pound of mud, it will be you'll affect the high end.
Right.
But in general, we haven't seen any cases where people have misapplied or applied too much mud to the point where the product is not still sounding great.
Okay. Now, not only with LiveWall, as you know, let's just say it's a left and a left channel, right channel.
Mm-hmm.
You also have a LiveWall product that is a subwoofer, correct?
Right.
Which is slightly different in that when you mud, you're not necessarily mudding over the diaphragm, you're just doing the edges. Is that correct?
That's correct. It actually uses a different patent. It's a different technology.
Mm.
And in the case of the subwoofer, we've done testing on how much flexibility mud has. And, you know, there's a certain amount, but as you get lower in frequency, then the diaphragm will have a larger excursion. And so we want to limit, we want to remove the specter of having any cracked mud. So by leaving the mud off of the inside of the diaphragm, in the case of the subwoofer, it allows us to tune the subwoofer so it goes down to whatever it is, you know, high 30s, like 35 hertz or so.
Okay.
And not have to worry about any mud cracking.
Yeah, I was watching some videos on your website earlier today on the way that they were installed, because I have yet to install either one of these products on LiveWall. And then it seems that, you know, the one you tape and the other one has a bit more sealing before taping on the subwoofer.
Yes.
Yeah,
because you're building up so much pressure behind the diaphragm
mm-hmm.
that you've got to seal the whole thing up, and otherwise you'll lose some bass.
Okay. Yeah, I figured it'd be a bit more rigid as far as installation goes on a
Yep.
subwoofer,
Yeah.
which makes sense.
And when we sell the subwoofer, the live wall sub, the back box comes along with it, so you don't get a choice.
It comes with. That's great.
Yep.
Before we get into the next couple of products, I want to thank my sponsors one more time. As I mentioned earlier, Ingram Micro. They are the world's largest technology distributor delivering flexible multi-channel supply chain solutions and more. If you go to ingrammicro.com, you can check them out, along with Atlas Sound, speakers, amps, racks, mic stands, everything that you pretty much need to integrate into, or that we already integrate into. And if you go to atlassound.com, you can check them out. Interesting thing with your products versus everything just kind of being the Bay Audio name.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, you have your architectural TV speakers, which we'll touch in a second. Live Wall is kind of its own family name.
Yes.
And then once you get into the landscape department, which you have a full line for, it has its own name as well, correct?
Which, yes.
Park Stevens?
Yes.
Is there a story behind Park Stevens, or is that just kind of something you guys landed on when designing these products?
It's a story, but it's just not interesting.
Everything's interesting, right? Everyone's got a story.
I like names. I think it's easy for people to remember things when there's a good, catchy name that goes along with it. And okay. We were looking for a name that kind of evoked landscape architecture. And just the idea of having a name that almost sounds like an architectural firm, you know, like two last names, Park and Stevens.
Yeah.
And the fact that Park is outdoors, and the fact that my middle name happens to be Steven.
I knew it. I was showing my brother some of your guys' stuff earlier. And he's like, Park Stevens, huh? Because his name is Steven as well. As all.
Exactly.
He's like, why is it not Park Johnny? He's like, oh, that sucks for you. I'm like, yeah, you're not coming on the show.
Exactly. So that's how that comes about. And
okay.
Yeah.
It is interesting, though. I kind of figured it might go that range, but, you know, I'm not always right. I tend to not be, but I try to pretend that I am online. Let's talk a little bit about your outdoor line. I like that, and I'm pretty sure you guys have a 70-volt version, correct?
We sell more 70-volt than 8-ohm. Way more.
That's what I would assume. And I'll just say this before we talk about it. For other companies out there, if you're listening, seriously, 70-volt, if I don't see why you're not doing it, or maybe you're just not reaching the right audience. You know, if you're reaching custom integration, most people, on some scale, if you're doing like high-end audio, they tend to have big yards. And when we get into 70 volt, you can go long distances and not have to worry about voltage drop. And it makes sense to at least look at it. So that being said, let's talk about your outdoor speaker systems.
Well, I mean, you started me off on a good path with the 70 volt. I can tell you why most audio companies shy away from it. And that's because 70 volt transformers just sound terrible.
Mm.
And that became our... Well, we had a number of acoustic and engineering challenges, and we spent quite a bit of time, and we created an audiophile transformer.
Okay.
And we worked it and worked it and worked it until when we did taste tests between an 8-ohm and a 70-volt version, no one could tell the difference.
Is it a toroidal transformer?
You know, it's over my head. I don't know how – Ricardo Lazzari is our chief engineer.
Hmm.
And we also keep him in an undisclosed location. So
in the basement, writing code and designing.
I don't really know.
That's okay.
What the answer is, but it took us a while to get to the transformer to the point where it sounds great, and that allowed us to really push hard on 70 volt systems and feel confident that when an integrator put the system in, they'd be blown away by it because it does have that 8-ohm sound to it.
Okay.
So I'll give you a quick little rundown on what the challenges were for Park Stevens.
All right.
Park Stevens came about because a friend of mine who's quite wealthy and has a multi-million dollar house on about 4 acres in downtown Portland, had a bunch of outdoor speakers on his home when he purchased it. And he said, you know, I have probably $500,000 worth of clapboard siding on my house. And I have these speakers that look horrible. And it kind of kills, all that money I spent on making the exterior of my house beautiful. And why can't someone design a beautiful outdoor speaker? And that was kind of the genesis of Park Stevens, where we said, look, people want sound outside. They want really good sound outside. Right. But it really should be driven by aesthetics, the same way that we were attuned to it inside the house. And so the last thing that people want outside their house is a speaker that looks like a speaker, in our estimation. Because it almost looks out of place. You're not quite sure why is there a speaker on the outside of your house. Mm-hmm. It seems like who would do that, except, you know, cruise ships have speakers and they're there for PA systems. You know, places that have speakers is usually there for public safety, not for music and beauty. So we took a different approach and created a canister that is driven by an architect, by what an architect would want to have, okay, and not necessarily by what an acoustician would want to have. And we said, this is the form factor we have to work with. It gives us the flexibility of mounting in all kinds of ways, spikes, and I can get into that in a moment. Yeah. But it really gives us the ability to mount it on the side of the house and make it look like an architectural element, not like something that was inside that's been turned into plastic and put outside. And so then the engineering challenge became, how do you overcome the form factor so that acoustically you make the form factor irrelevant? And that was how we came about creating this driver. We have this, it's a 4-inch collinear driver, meaning it has it's a mid-range, mid-bass driver with a collinear tweeter. The tweeter is actually I don't know exactly how the technology works, but it's a device that sits where the dust cap would sit, and it moves with the cone. So it's always in phase. It's always in phase with the cone. And we put a 6.5-inch motor structure on the back of this 4-inch driver, and we built it in such a way with adhesives that come out of the aerospace industry that the thing just handles a tremendous amount of power and has very broad off-axis dispersion. So when you place, we have a model that has, it's a canister, PS4D, and it has two drivers on either side of the canister. And when you place that up against the structure of a building, you're looking at a nice architectural element. You don't see grills, you don't see speakers, you don't see drivers, you just see an aluminum powder coated structure. But the sound pattern that comes out of it is very big and broad and covers quite a distance. Hmm. So it's kind of amazing because you place it up there and it doesn't look like a speaker. It looks more like a high-end lighting fixture.
Yeah.
And you turn it on and people are saying, wow, where's that coming from? And you say, well, those are speakers. They go, they don't look like speakers. Well, yeah, that was the point.
Yeah, right.
So we take that canister and we built a track into it. And the track allows us to attach this mounting swivel mount that we then can rotate the speaker in 360 degrees and up and down and, you know, yaw and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And we can attach it to a spike, stick it in the ground. We can attach it to a mount that goes in a ceiling or a wall. We can flush mount it directly to the structure so you don't see any hardware at all. Mm-hmm. And then most interestingly, we can direct bury the entire speaker. So the speaker is about 6 inches long and about four inches around.
With the direct bow version, not to cut you off, sorry.
Yeah.
the canister or the speaker, yeah, the whole assembly itself can be direct burial, or does it require a separate unit to direct burial? Because I see that there's the PS4 top hat burial kit.
Right. So when you bury it, you dig a hole about 5 inches deep, place the canister inside the hole facing up.
Okay.
And then we have a top hat, which is like a mushroom cap with three layers. And you take the aluminum grill off and you replace it with this top hat.
Oh.
And that becomes the new covering for the driver.
So it itself is fully sealed. That top hat attaches.
It is. Right. If you took a PS4, threw it into the pool, ran away, came back a week later, pulled it out, it would still play. So
sweet.
It's hermetically sealed.
That'd be great.
I mean, I can tell you. I'll give you one little very strange engineering thing that we came up with. We wanted to keep debris, dirt, stuff out of the driver.
Right.
So typically, you would put a scrim cloth on top of the below the grill or on top of the driver itself.
Mm-hmm.
And if you use a scrim cloth, a typical scrim cloth is going to get saturated with water, and over time, it's going to degrade. And we found a cloth. It's actually called a Sachi cloth. It's made in Italy, and it was designed for rugged outdoor wear. And it is a waterproof cloth that is acoustically invisible. So you can take the cloth and you look right through it. I mean, you can see right through it because it's like a mesh.
Mm-hmm.
But what the materials that they use and the way that they weave the fibers, if you take the cloth and stick it under a faucet and turn the faucet on, the water pools on top of the cloth and will not drip through. And we use it on a special ring so that when any water or debris hits the face of the speaker, it gets wicked away by the Sachi cloth and goes through these little ports that are built into the side of the product.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to install a couple of these speakers and then tell the homeowner, I'm like, you can totally throw these in the pool and they'll do it. I'm like, what are you doing? Don't ever do that. You're an idiot. Why would you ever listen to me?
Well, they are IPX5 rated, which is an international standard for saltwater spray, heat, humidity.
Boats.
And IPX5 is the equivalent of marine grade. So if you're in the Navy and you need to buy a product to put outside on your ship, you'd have to buy IPX5 and above. And that's what this is rated to.
Interesting. I did not know that. I learned something even more than I'm learning already. I used to work in a machine shop, and so we built a lot of stuff for Boeing Airlines and things like that. And we use a lot of, like, as far as stainless goes, like 304L and things, and 316L. And, you know, because they're going on airplanes and boats and Black Hawk helicopters and aluminum. And so as far as the IPX5, I was unaware of that, but that's good to know.
Yeah. So the satellites are PS4s.
Okay.
And the subwoofers are PS10s.
Hmm.
And we have two versions of the sub. One is a direct burial with a mushroom cap, and the other is a freestanding subwoofer. And it has two different mounting options. And it comes with, you can buy it with spikes and just stick it into the garden. Or we make an under deck kit that you can attach it underneath your decking. And it's kind of like hanging there like Shamu when they're transporting it to SeaWorld. So the subwoofer is a 10-inch driver. And we keep the subwoofers 8 ohms.
Okay.
Not 70 volt, because to do an audiophile 70-volt transformer, it would be about the size of the subwoofer itself and probably cost about $1,000 at cost of goods sold. So we keep it as an 8-ohm, and then we source an amplifier that that can run 70-volt and 8-ohm out of each channel.
Okay.
So a typical system is going to be one subwoofer, 4 to 6 satellites, per zone, or per amplifier, I should say.
Okay, and then do you provide the amplifiers with the landscape stuff, or is that a whole third party?
No, we provide it because we source it, and then we include a piece of electronics. It's a summing circuit because when you are running 70 volt, you're in mono. And if you just allow your electronics to run mono, you could have phase cancellation. So we created a piece of electronics that deals with phase. And so you come into the box stereo, it comes out mono, and then it goes into the amplifier.
Can you say who the amplifier company is or no?
Yeah, it's QSC.
QSC, my buddies.
Yeah. Oh, great amplifiers.
Yeah, definitely. I've used quite a few of them for 70 volt stuff.
Yeah.
Well, that, I think, kind of covers your Park Stevens
yes.
products, right?
Yes.
Do you foresee the company expanding this line ever, or do you think you've got a pretty good solution to the problems that were out there?
I'm really happy with what we have right now.
Mm-hmm.
We have done systems that have over 100 satellites and dozens of subwoofers in one home.
Okay.
And we've done systems that have, you know, 3 or 4 satellites and a subwoofer. And the product just satisfies the integrator from the smallest job to the largest job. And we listen pretty carefully to the field. We're always asking, you know, what would make your life easier? And right now, I think we kind of hit it out of the park with the form factor. So there's no plans at this point to make any modifications.
Yeah, I just want to say that I really like the idea of being able to take a PS4 and being able just to direct burial and put that the little top hat kit on, and that is the direct burial kit. It's already there, yep. And you just add the hat and that's it.
Right. And, you know, what's interesting about outdoor systems is there are some aesthetic things. The first is when companies first came out with Malibu light style outdoor speakers, it seemed like a clever solution.
Mm-hmm.
And it very well may be for the mass of clients, but the people that buy our stuff are putting in $100 lights outside.
Right.
And they don't want a $100 light system and then a $20 light system that happens to make music. That is just not a design that they're looking for. And so the landscape architects are telling us, look, we don't want to see anything. We don't want you to look like a Malibu light. I already got lights. I paid $100 for them. I want to not see your product at all. And that drove the top hat with the direct burial.
Mm-hmm.
But it also created an engineering challenge, which was, how do you get a speaker far away from the action that still plays loud and has great coverage? Because a lot of the products that are out there have small drivers, and it forces you to bring the speakers very close into where the activity is, which is not a good place, because then they become, then you see them.
Right, part of the area where you're trying to enjoy and not see things
right.
like that.
So if you've got a big pool area and you're forced to bring your speakers close to the deck, that's not great. You'd much rather push them as far back to the corners of the yard as possible, which forces you to make a product that just plays louder and sounds good at distance. And so when we were developing this driver, we had a couple of engineering criteria, and one of them was we wanted 85 dB at, I think it was 90 feet. So it's pretty impressive how loud they will play at a distance, because we knew that they would be tucked into the bushes far away from activity. So that drove the engineering side of things.
I'm sure architects love that.
Well, yeah, they don't want to see it.
Right. Typically when I talk to a new architect and I either talk about audio or automation, they just kind of like cringe, like, ugh, mm-hmm. I don't ever want to see this ever again. You know, we want right. it, but we don't want to see it. So right. you actually have a lot of products where you're not seeing, but are indeed hearing very, very well.
Yes. Again, we're trying to find the challenges, the acoustic and the aesthetic challenges, and we're trying to overcome them with products. So that's what drives product development.
Well, that being said, you do also have some home theater box, traditional style box speakers.
Yes.
As far as form factor, maybe not traditional quality-wise, but you definitely do have some bookshelf style or tower series speakers, correct?
Yes, we have two product offerings. One is the TC product line, and that's really geared more towards receivers and lower priced separates.
Okay.
And the challenge, we had a couple of challenges there. The first challenge was, how do you get something that is huge in sound but super tiny? And our solution is the TC40, which is the same, it uses the same driver complement as the JM40 I was telling you about, the 6x9 inch in wall.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same driver complement in this little bookshelf product. And it's just a phenomenal little guy. He's, again, about 6x9 and puts out a tremendous amount of power. The TC line has two bookshelf products, the TC40, which is the small one, and we recommend people cross it over right around 70 hertz. And it has a TC60, which is larger. It's 6.5 inch two-way, more of a traditional size product. Just a little quick background on me. I first started in this industry at Boston Acoustics in 1989.
Okay.
And we were kind of known for the A70, which was an 8 inch two-way. And it became, it was the moneymaker for the company. And when Boston Acoustics purchased Snell, I was the president of Snell for a couple of years.
Snell, nice.
Yeah. And we had a product that was the K series, and it was a 6.5 inch two-way, and it was also kind of like the A70. It was kind of the benchmark bookshelf product. And when I started Bay Audio, the market kind of is just very comfortable with that size, that form, mm-hmm. for a bookshelf thing. What's changed over the years for me is what that speaker is supposed to do. And back at Boston Acoustics, it went down to about, 50, 60 hertz and played pretty loud. And at Snell, we had a little bit more bass, maybe went down to about, 50, 45, 50 hertz and played pretty loud. Here at Boston, at Bay Audio, the challenge was not to make a bookshelf speaker, because people were not buying two-channel bookshelf systems from us, but to build a theater product that was bookshelf sized, that could go into a cabinet or be freestanding on a bookshelf out the room, but play super low. And if you humor me for 2 minutes, I'll tell you what the physics are. A typical theater that's receiver based is usually constrained in how many subwoofers you can put into the room, either because of space constraints or budget. And if you have one subwoofer in a room, you're going to create nodes. There's just no way around it. And the best subwoofer in the world cannot overcome a room. The way to overcome bass in a room is to have as many subwoofers as possible. And in the theoretical ideal world, you would have 100 subwoofers in your room.
If I could afford it and have the room.
Exactly. Because what that does is it makes the room irrelevant. So every time you add another subwoofer to the room, you tune it properly, you're able to overcome another standing wave problem somewhere in the room, typically at the listening position, typically at 60 hertz, which is like where bass sounds really good.
Look, let me say, and I could be way off base by saying this, and you're typically, when adding another subwoofer isn't necessarily giving you more bass, and right. only it might just be filling the even exactly. amount of bass in the room, correct?
Right. Okay. Yeah. You don't, if you do it right, it doesn't feel like more bass. As a matter of fact, it might even feel less, it will feel less boomy because you have fewer peaks and valleys.
Mm-hmm. But just well, fills up the room though.
Exactly. It because of where you're sitting relative to the subwoofer, there will be some frequencies that are being amplified because of your distance to adjoin to room to the walls, and there are some frequencies that are being canceled out. And if you put in a second subwoofer into the room in another location, it too will have frequencies that are amplified and frequencies that are canceled out, but they'll be different frequencies than the first subwoofer. And so now the two of them are working together, and if the first subwoofer has a suck out at 60 hertz and the second subwoofer has a suck out at 55 hertz, but not at 60, you've kind of cleaned up the 60 hertz problem from this first subwoofer. If you add a third subwoofer, a fourth, and a fifth, until you get to 100 subwoofers in the room, you can tune the room so that there it is completely flat from in terms of bass. Now, theoretically beautiful, it's just practically impossible. So for us, the challenge was, how do you create the best theater solution on a budget in a space-constrained room? And that would be to have three subwoofers. But we can't ask the clients or the integrators to put three subwoofers in. Except if we make a bookshelf speaker that operates like a full-range speaker doing subwoofers work. So the TC60 goes down to 32 hertz and plays awfully loud. And so when we specify that product, when the integrators specify it, they're running them full range. They're giving it all the information that the subwoofer would get. And they're using the LFE, or they're using a subwoofer channel out to a powered sub. So now you have three things in the room playing at least 35 hertz up to, you know, 80 hertz or so where your bass is. And it smooths out that bass. So if you have an AV receiver based system and you have a pair of TC60s up front and TC42, which is our center channel, and a TC10 or a TC12 subwoofer, and TC40s in the rear or JM40s in the rear, you have the equivalent of three subwoofers in that little theater. And it just overcomes that boomy peak and valley problem that you have from one sub. So it's quite smooth.
But that, so that's specifically the TC line, right? You also have a similar PTM series?
Right. So for the PTM product, we now have different challenges, because whoever's going to put a PTM theater in is going to be spending at least $100,000 all in, not just the speakers, but everything.
Cool. Okay.
And so budget is less of an issue.
Right.
And so now in the PTM Plus line, we have taken... And we've done this for years, but we look at bass in ranges. So we have three ranges in the world of bass. We have the rumble range, which is going to be immeasurable, you know, 15 hertz up to about 20 to 30 hertz. And that range is where you will just get effects, you know, thunder and stomping and big earthquakey-like effects. There's nothing musical down at that range. And so we build a subwoofer specifically for those frequencies. And you would build a product differently for a 20 hertz note than you would for an 80 hertz note. For a 20 hertz note, what you want is something that is quick, but also pushes a lot of air, because that's what's happening. It's almost subsonic from a hearing standpoint. So the PTM Plus line has three kinds of subwoofers. It has rumble subs, and we make them as 15-inch or 18-inch, using 15-inch or 18-inch drivers, and we have some custom cabinet sizes, but we typically custom size the cabinet for the room. Then we have the impact zone. The impact zone is going to be from 30 hertz up to about 80 hertz, and that's where people really think bass is. And if you were to design a product specifically for that zone, now you're looking for speed. It has to hit. So the impulse curve has to be very quick. And then the product has to stop making noise as soon as the signal goes away, meaning it doesn't have a bloom to the box. You get your hit and it's done. And you don't have that spearing effect that takes place on many subwoofers. So our impact subs are smaller. They're 12 inches and 10 inches, and they're built in cabinets that are very highly braced, and they have their own amplifiers, and they're designed just for that hit. So when it hits you in the chest, it hits you, and then it runs away.
Nice, good punch.
The third thing that we do is a transitional sub, and we call those base staging modules. And a base staging module is geared for the frequencies from about 60, 70 hertz up to wherever you cross them over with the satellites. So call it 80 to 90 hertz. And you take those subwoofers, and they're built as towers. And they would go at the stage, at the front stage, underneath the satellites. And they are tuned the same way that you would tune a satellite speaker. So they're tuned for musicality and for speed, but they're bridging the gap between what a satellite is strong at, which is mid-range and imaging, and what the subwoofers want to do, which is rumble and impact. So it's a transitional sub. So a PTM plus theater, when we specify it, we will specify a rumble sub,
okay,
a couple of impact subs, and at least two of the base staging modules. So now you've got five things making bass in the room. And we've overcome a lot of the room challenges because of the number of subwoofers.
Okay.
Once you get to the satellites, we have two options. We have a PTM plus monitor, which is as small as we could possibly make a high output product. And we have a PTM plus array, which is a Diapolito style array that you can use vertically or horizontally. Now the challenge, the acoustic challenge for us with satellites was very, very, very low measurable distortion, because we were building tools, we're building scalpels that the doctor uses in surgery. We want to create a product that has no characteristics of its own, no coloration. It doesn't sound like anything. It's, we want to put a sine wave into it, and we want to measure that same exact sine wave coming out of it, which is not the approach that you would take if you're building a musical speaker. Typically, a musical speaker has a curve to it, and it has a characteristic. It has a personality. We strip the thing of all personality. And the reason we do that is because every PTM plus theater that we sell, we tune.
Oh.
We send an engineer into the field, and we take our scalpel and we tune it with DSP, with manipulating the amplifiers and phase.
Mm.
And it takes us somewhere between 4 and 6 hours to do a theater. And when we're done, it's pristine, and it is to the client's taste. But if we started with a product that already had its own characteristics and colorization, it would limit the ability for us to make changes.
Okay.
So the products they measure less than 1% THD, meaning you put a sine wave in and you measure a sine wave on the outside coming out, and there's less than a 1% variation between what goes in and what comes out.
Let me just say a few things on the options. It looks like you have quite a few wood finish options. I don't know if they're actually custom wood or if they're just painted, or...
We'll do whatever you want.
Okay, so it's super custom to whatever they want.
Super custom. We have a client, we have an integrator who has an architect, designer, who designed a billiards table inside a guy's house out of brass, and they said, can you make the speakers match the pool table? And we got samples of the brass, and we built a wooden speaker, and then we brought it to a metal shop, and we had the thing skinned in brass and patinaed, and nice. it's beautiful.
Nice.
So we'll make them any way you want them.
And can I touch on the materials of the speakers? It looks like some of them might be aluminum cones and maybe some soft dome tweeters and things like that, or...
In the case of the PTM Plus?
Yes.
We use a professional grade mid-range driver that we get from Italy, and that's pulp, I think. And then the tweeter is just a scan speak. It's a very high-end scan speak tweeter, and I believe that is a Silk Dome.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just kind of looking at and trying to see what they are there.
And then the base drivers are aluminum cones.
Okay.
Yeah, otherwise they collapse on themselves.
And then I feel like maybe we should touch. You also do sound bars. I'm assuming custom to fit TVs as well.
Yep. So we have what we sell the most of is a product we introduced about 8 months ago called the TVX Bar.
Okay.
It's an aluminum extrusion. We have metalworking facilities in house, and we cut the bar and the grill to the exact width of the television. We have our own proprietary drivers. We build the box, so there are three separate, distinct chambers, so we don't share airspace inside the cabinet.
Okay.
So there's no bleed through between a center channel and a left or the right. We ship it with a universal bracket, and it works with TVs that have those little bumps, the little logo bumps.
Yeah, right in the center, the little mm-hmm. notch. Okay.
So no matter what the configuration of the TV is, we have a very clever skirt that's built into the bar.
Okay.
And it obscures the airspace between the notch and the wall.
How deep are they in terms of like thickness, like comparison, you know, like. Eventually, I think, you know, TVs will just be like these really thin OLED TVs, although we're not there yet.
Yeah.
Large TVs.
And then they'll curve them so they're 6 inches off the wall.
Yeah, right?
How deep are they? I think 2.5 inches.
Oh,
less than two,
okay.
inch, two and a half inches or so.
Okay.
Yeah, they're quite shallow.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't imagine. I can't wait for curved TVs to be common. That'll be fun. I'm like, nope, you don't get a sound bar. You're getting full-size towers, and that's what you get. Deal with it.
They'll ask us to make curved speakers. I can see it.
Yeah, that'll be great.
But, you know, when it comes to flat screen TVs, that's driving our live wall business.
Okay.
Because someone puts in a TV and they flush mount it into a bedroom.
Yeah.
They don't want to see speakers. So
right.
So we'll sell five live wall speakers
with that TV.
Mm-hmm.
Or to complement the TV so that you're
right.
seeing it.
Huh?
Okay.
And you don't see
sense.
The speakers.
Yep. Right. Now just I guess to touch back on the sound bar being custom and such, what if someone wants it, you know, like, oh, I want a nice maple box or housing or something like that. You know, I know a lot of it, you said it's aluminum, and I'm assuming
right.
you could either, you know, anodize or paint or whatever you want to be that color of the soundbar. But what about someone who prefers, you know, the look or sound tuning coming from a wood cabinet?
So we have four different wood cabinet models available. And so when people want very discreet customization, be it 80-inch TVs, and they want a full theater experience, we build the PTM product into a bar.
Oh, wow.
And it's, you know, it's 90-some-odd inches long, and it
wow.
comes in a big crate. If you want something for a typical 50 to 60-inch TV, and it needs to be red or maple or white, then we make a thin bar, and we make an LCR bar. They use different driver sets, and they're wooden cabinets. So the wood shop just makes whatever you want.
Very awesome. I'm assuming the same is true. Like, oh, I have 152-inch plasma, and I need it to match this. So we'll just
yep.
make me whatever I need.
Yep, whatever you want.
Is there anything in the works? I mean, it sounds like you took all these problems that are out there, and you came up with a good range of solutions for
yes.
each individual acoustic problem and the aesthetics version and solution to that problem as well, and came up with these different, you have Park Stevens, you have the home theater, you have LiveWall,
right.
and they all seem to be very aesthetically pleasing, and I've yet to listen to them, but I'm assuming that they're very, very acoustically pleasing.
Yeah, they're good.
Especially since, like, you know, with the landscape stuff, you can hide. Actually, it would have been funny if you were, actually, they're not that great. See if I caught you off guard there. Well, unless you have some other things that you'd like to cover, I think we did a good range on what Hubei Audio is and what you guys are producing out there for us as integrators on the custom side and for high-end such.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the final product question would be, you know, what do we see the future? And for us, it's more and more invisible solutions. And
okay, really hiding everything.
Yep, and we do have a smaller version of the live wall speaker coming out. It's about 10 inches by 12 inches, and that'll be able to go into soffits and hallways, and you know, it hits a lower price point, so more people can use it. But we fully expect that 4 or 5 years from now, you will not see a grill in a ceiling.
Really? So everything will be completely hidden?
Everything. Yep.
Huh.
Yep. Once people get a taste of it, they're not going to go back.
Right. So you think we'll just eliminate sound bars and like tower? It'll all just be solid hidden.
For distributed audio.
Okay.
Yes, I still think that there's still a place for architecture inside your house. Mm-hmm. You know, meaning tower speakers and box speakers, because that's furniture and people love furniture.
Right.
But when it comes to just audio as a solution for distributed audio,
mm-hmm.
I just don't think that 4 years from now, if you look up, you will not see a grill in a high-end home that's being built.
It'll all just be hidden. Okay.
It'll all be hidden.
I mean, I agree with you. Like I said, most people don't care to see the speaker but would love to hear it.
Right.
And there's always been the problem of, like, usually when someone's like, oh, I have a hidden speaker, I'm like, yeah, I don't want to see or hear it, actually. I'm like, I'm sure you do, but I don't really don't have time to kind of, like, tell you why I don't want to hear it. But I'd love to hear yours. And what is the best way for someone who is interested about becoming a dealer at Bay Audio? How do they reach you, or who should they reach out to?
Call the office. Call the office or send an email. It's sales@bayaudio.com. And if you just look us up on bayaudio.com, you can find the phone number.
And anyone else who wants to take it a step further and check out some of the stuff they're doing online, it's a digital world. You can go to, as you mentioned, bayaudio.com. They're on Facebook. I think it's Bay Audio. It's just their Facebook page. If you go to the Twitters, if that still exists tomorrow, it's Bay Audio or at Bay Audio Inc. Ira, if you want to reach out to this guy and tell him you loved what he said or you hated what he said, you can tell him both. It's at IRA, Ira Bay Audio. All one word. And if you didn't like anything I said, you can tell me the exact same thing on Twitter at JMOTA3. It's JMOTA3. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, everything. I'm somewhere. You can yell at me and tell me you didn't like the show or that you loved it. Did you have anything else to say?
No, that was fun.
Okay. Well, everyone, this has been AV Insider. Check out Bay Audio. Go to bayaudio.com. Check out all the stuff we're talking about. And probably won't see a lot of it because it's all hidden. So until next time, this has been Johnny and AV Insider. Ira, thank you for being on the show.
Thanks
and
so much.
Hopefully to have you back when you guys have some of those newer products.
Great.